Are you searching for adventure?
Twink, bear, cub, otter.
She was like a murdery Gorton's fisherman.
Wait, this happened in the movie?
A lifetime of Hallmark.
Well, hello, everybody. It's Les Kirkendall Barrett, and it is your favorite day of the week. Another episode of A Lifetime of Hallmark, where we talk about movies on both Lifetime and the Hallmark channels, and we try to make sense of them. Hello, Jason Bowers.
Hello, Les Kirkendall Barrett.
And hello, Kirk Fitzpatrick.
Hello, Les Kirkendall Barrett, and hello, Jason Bowers.
Hi.
Here we are. Hi. Another week. Another week inside. Well, actually, Jason, like, how is it for you? Like, are you working again in your?
I've been back at work for about 2 months. Like, I was only off for a month, and the company I work for has two different businesses, and I was mainly working on one side. Now I'm working on the other, so I'm working every day, and I'm largely exposed to the elements. Like, we have a big door that's open all day long, so I'm out in the world.
Wow. And how are you, Kurt?
I'm good. My chemo is all done now. As I said, this would have been the week that I would have had another round, but I'm further away from the chemo than I've been since I started. So I'm
Yay!
Doing
that's
I'm doing
awesome.
Well.
Congrats.
I saw that Les, I saw you were reading the Andy Warhol diaries, and I
yes.
have a now. I think you have had that book for 20 years. Am I right?
No.
No?
No. Oh,
okay.
I've had it for five.
You 5 years, okay. Because that book's been around for years. I was like, you've had that on your shelf for years. You finally
got it. You know where I got it? I got it at Powell's in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, okay.
And for those of you who don't know, Powell's is this big, famous bookstore out of Portland. And it's rumored that you can get pretty much any book you want there. And so I literally was just kind of messing around, and I'm like, well, I'm going to see if they had the Andy Warhol diaries. And they did. And I bought it for like, I bought that book for like less than $5.
Oh, wow. I had Gilda Radner's book for 15 years before I read it, so it does happen.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, the Andy Warhol Diaries is, you know, almost 900 pages long, and because of my surgery, I'm pretty much late. Well, actually, I'm allowed to walk now. I'm allowed to, like, the doctors encouraged me to walk, like, a half an hour a day now. But before, I was pretty much laid up on my couch with not much to do except to watch soap operas and The Real Housewives. But what's different?
Yeah, this baseline for you.
So that's why I picked up the book, because I was just like sitting around.
Okay. It's pretty good. I understand the book. He says that Bianca Jagger had underarm BO. Have you gotten to that part?
I have not.
And he also talks about... He was in a plane with John Travolta where Travolta was grieving.
I haven't gotten to that part yet, but I've read about that part in like snippets and excerpts. Because I guess John Travolta's girlfriend at the time like passed away. Like he was dating this
woman. Yeah.
From Eight Is Enough. She was on the first season of Eight Is Enough. What? And she died.
Oh, she was?
Yeah. Her name was Diana Hyland.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
She was on the first season of Eight Is Enough, and she died, I think, like, right after the pilot came out, or sometime, like, early on in the series. And so that's why they shifted the storyline to that. He was a widower for a while until Betty Buckley joined the cast.
Yeah.
Oh, she was the wife? She was Dick Van Patten's wife?
Uh-huh.
On the show? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
She was older. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he was grieving that. But it's a good book. Like, if you're a fan of, like, Studio 54 and, it, right. like, that era, it's a good book. Because he talks shit about everybody.
I want to know Andy Warhol's thoughts on Dick Van Patten.
Well, Dick Van Patten was a swing guy. Dick, what? He's talked about in... oh, yeah. He's talked about in... Who's that producer who does the Kid Stays in the Picture? What's that guy's name? You know,
Robert Evans.
I know who you're talking about.
Robert Evans. Yeah, actually, it's in the Kid Stays in the Picture. He talks about Dick Van Patten. He and Dick Van Patten used to be like they were out swinging. I mean, not like swingers, but they were out.
Like he was a playboy,
partying quite a bit. Yeah, they were out. Playing the scene.
I had no idea. Because my whole...
I know, right?
Like, my only real knowledge base of Dick Van Patten is playing the dad on Eight Is Enough.
Right.
Oh, yeah, no. This is like... Because I listened to that famous audiobook, The Kid Stays in the Picture.
Yeah.
I'll tell you who else was a real swinger. This is going to shock you. Gene Siskel from Siskel and Ebert.
What?
He hung out, I believe he hung out with like Hugh Hefner, who was hanging out with like Playboy Playmates, and yeah, like, wow. He's no longer with
us. Well, now all I can think about before, is what he was doing with his thumb.
Exactly.
Think about it.
That's right. This is the way I remember things. My brain's a bit distorted, but people at home could fact check me on this, but. Dick Van Patten and Gene Siskel.
I had an audition once. I had a commercial audition where one of his sons was like my audition partner.
Oh, one of the Van Pattens?
Gene Siskel's son or Dick Van Patten?
Dick Van Patten's son.
Oh, okay.
At least one, maybe two or three of them are directors. They direct a ton of TV.
Oh, yeah.
There's a Van Patten who used to direct Boardwalk Empire. I don't know if it's his son or not. It probably is. And who directed the first, I believe the first episode of Game of Thrones. People can fact check me on that as well.
Because I think he has quite a few children. I think he does. Like, I want to say four or five. Not eight.
If he would get to that number, he would just say enough.
Adam Rich is...
I think so.
He's still with us.
Okay.
But I think he went through the not so good adult child star thing.
Right.
He'd probably come on our show. That up now.
Probably.
He'd probably contact us.
He's still alive.
he'd like to be.
Yes. In 1991, he was arrested in a drug theft. So that was quite a while ago. It was almost 30 years. So he may have turned things around. Yeah.
He was stealing, or yeah, I guess he was stealing. It was stolen from him.
Right. That would be ironic if somebody robbed him and they arrested him.
So wait a minute. You had drugs? You're under arrest.
I did not like you on Eight Is Enough.
No, but he's got to hook up with Justine Bateman, who wrote a book. She wrote a book on how she doesn't want to be famous, or that she used to be famous, and it's the downside of everything.
Fame?
Yeah, I think that's what it's called, right?
The downside of fame?
Really?
The
name
of the
book, I know she wrote a book.
I didn't know
what it was about. Now here's a segue, guys.
Mm.
Okay, so
it's not like we have plenty of segues already, but okay.
One of the Van Pattens is married to Eileen Davidson, who was not only a Real Housewife of Beverly Hills, who was not only Ashley Abbott on Young and the Restless. There was one point that Ashley Abbott moved over to the soap opera, The Bold and the Beautiful.
Ah, that is a good segue.
Ooh. Yes. What do you have to say about The Bold and the Beautiful?
We found an amazing story in the news regarding The Bold and Beautiful going back into production, right, Les?
Yes. So as you know, because of the pandemic, production in Hollywood has been down like almost the entire time, and so like soap operas have, other than Days of Our Lives, all of the other soap operas have literally run out of episodes. And like, I've never seen this in my history of watching soaps. So most soap operas are actually showing reruns right now. So The Bold and the Beautiful is finally going back to filming, but now all of the productions that are going into filming, they have like a strict set of rules that they need to follow. So they're thinking of very creative ways to get around the rules. So now, so in Bold and the Beautiful's case, The Bold and the Beautiful is going to be using blow-up dolls for their sex scenes.
When I saw this, I thought it was an Onion headline at first, and then I'm like, oh no, this is real. I don't think they're blow-up dolls, though. I think they're those, like, the more
mannequins,
hefty, like, you know, yeah, it's more of a mannequin with like a rubbery exterior that looks a little more realistic, but either way, creepy AF.
Well, okay, so this is what the head producer, the executive producer and head writer, Bradley Bell, said in an interview with Forbes magazine.
Oh boy.
Like, I know Forbes magazine isn't quite what it used to be anyway, but I do think it's funny that not only are they writing about the show The Bold and the Beautiful, that like one of the writers for Forbes magazine had to write a story about how they're using sex dolls to pursue production.
What? I got hired to do this? Has it reached National Geographic yet?
So this is what he said.
The National Review is doing stories on it.
He said, we have some lifelike blow-up dolls that have been sitting around here for the past 15 years that we've used.
Pause for 1 second, please. Pause for 1 second. What?
They're claiming.
What?
They're 15 years old.
Okay, so 15 years. So that's what, 2005. So in 2005, at some point, they looked at their budget and they said, you know what we need to buy some of, guys? Some blow-up dolls.
There might be a pandemic.
Now, but he explains the reason why they've had them for so long. Mm-hmm. He says, we've used it for various other stories, like when people were presumed dead. Because, you know, this big soap opera trope is you can easily be presumed dead. Everybody's been presumed dead on a soap opera at one time or another. So he says, we're dusting off the dolls, putting wigs and makeup on them, and they're going to be featured in love scenes. Mm. And then it goes on to say, does it make things even more disturbing? Wait. Okay.
Yes. Whatever the rest of it is, it's yes.
Yeah. Does it even make it even more disturbing considering that the lifelike dolls being used in sex scenes have previously been used as corpses?
So, do you think this was a genuine statement from the producer? Like, do you think it was, yeah, we have these dolls and we've used them before and we're just going to dust them off and use them again. We're being resilient. Or do you think it was we totally had these dolls before, not for anything creepy like cuddling with it under my desk. We certainly weren't using it for that for 15 years and 4 days.
Right. But here's another thing that they're doing. They are actually, there was another article that just came out. And so they're using the actors' real life spouses as stand-ins.
Oh, that's actually a good idea. Yes, that's really smart.
Yeah.
So okay. I think basically at this point, from what I've heard about like production in general, I think they're like scrambling for any way possible to get production going again, because it's like dire out there and it's not looking like it's going to pick up anytime soon.
No, they have to do what they have to do. I was so proud of myself this morning. I was thinking about this story about The Bold Beautiful. I just felt with such integrity. I thought, you know, I've never had sex with a blow-up doll. Thank God I could say that.
That's good.
It is good. It really is.
I haven't either, but I have used a blow-up doll to pose as a corpse. Is that weird?
What did you do?
I did use a blow-up doll to pose as a corpse. I'm trying to turn it around. Cool. I'm trying to...
In a pinch. Yeah. In a pinch. Like, I think in terms of the production, I did Tyler Perry is
this is going.
He's doing some creative stuff. He's up to something. No, he shoots in Atlanta, one of his sitcoms, and he was doing a whole thing where he's flying in his guest stars in a private jet, which costs a fortune. Then he quarantines the cast. Then everybody gets tested like every couple of days, and then like the group scenes are at like the end of the week, and it's all. But it's a lot of money to produce this stuff.
The thing is with his setup though, that actually sounds like that would be fun, only because the entire cast is like sequestered in this one area, and I guess it's kind of like they all stay together and stuff. Mm-hmm. I bet there's like a lot of shenanigans that go on.
Well, I don't think it's like a dormitory. Like, I don't think they're in like army barracks. I think he probably sets people up pretty well, or they're going to call SAG.
True.
You have to have your own dressing room, you know, so I think they have to have their own room to sleep in.
So Tyler Perry gets his own dressing room for him as Tyler Perry and for him as Medea.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
on my other on my other podcast, Soap Operas Love in the Afternoon,
I haven't listened to that yet.
We talked about the fact that in England, the soap operas actually have started filming again. And so what they have done is one of the soap operas called Emmerdale, literally what they have been doing is they have two people on an episode and they totally social distance on the entire episode. And no one over the age of 60, like all of the actors that are 60 or older are not allowed on the set. And I've seen a couple of the episodes and they're actually not bad.
They've been waiting and waiting for that rule to happen.
Yeah. Right?
Like but finally, we're going to be ageist.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how they like show the actors like social distancing and stuff and how they explain it. So, you know, the show's got to go on at some point, you know.
Hey, are any of the soap operas acknowledging the current times?
They're going to.
Okay.
They're going to. But they have, other than The Bold and the Beautiful, I don't think any others are shooting yet. But I've read that they're going to address it.
That'll be interesting when there are actual, like, shows that are existing during these this era.
Right.
I don't think we've had any yet.
No. Well, here's the thing. Because my acting class, my instructor was talking about the fact that they are shooting commercials, and they're shooting, like, Zoom-type commercials. And I know that I had an audition the other day, and I had to do it myself. Like, I had to self-tape it. And so... they're doing that a lot in lieu of going into the casting office. There are some casting offices that are having people in, but most auditions are like self-tape, and they are starting to do commercials with like two people, and it's like a Zoom sort of a thing.
They have people shoot their commercials at home. Like the actors have to shoot their commercials. Their whatever their part is in the commercial, they actually shoot it at home. I'd like to get that gig.
Right.
Wow. They're also recutting like old commercials, which means if you were in one of those old commercials, it gets recutting and you get paid the full amount again.
Which is nice. Man. Which is nice.
I'd like to get that.
Well, okay. Before we continue, is there any Black China news?
China.
Why, yes, there
China.
Is.
China. I have to have my China. China!
And now, the Black China Report. Here's Kirk Fitzpatrick.
I like that one part. China! Okay, this is from today's headlines. This is from TheBlast.com. Black China reveals epic possible collaboration with Nicki Minaj. Black China has been known for many things. In that last decade, China, real full name, Angela Renee White, has gone from being the stunt double for Nicki Minaj in music videos like Monster by Kanye West to one of the most... I didn't know that either. Yeah, because I remember that. To one of the most recognizable television personalities and models on Instagram. The 32-year-old brunette was featured on a recent interview with The Neighborhood Talk on Instagram, where she announced she wanted to make a song with Minaj. although some would immediately shoot this down considering the differences in the two celebrities' careers, Black is fully confident. She is fully confident that it could be arranged due to her positive business relationship with the Pink Friday singer, who, according to reports, has always supported her. According to reports, Chyna has decided not to collaborate with famous rapper Cardi B due to a feud that she and Minaj had, which ended with security getting involved. Although Minaj denies claims that she insulted Cardi by criticizing her parenting skills, the two have yet to reconcile. This, and the fact that she already has an amazing relationship with Nicki, strongly suggests that we may see a collaboration very soon. Nicki herself is yet to comment, but based on her previous collaboration history, it all looks promising. See, who says 2020 has all been bad news?
Wow.
I'm still stuck on, wait, Blac Chyna was Nicki Minaj's stunt double?
Yeah, remember that, yeah. That monster that... she's like, first thing first. I can't remember the whole thing. That was a while ago. That song.
You know how we always talk about how Blac Chyna is like doing all these like little jobs, and she's got her OnlyFans and all that to make money. Do you think that she's upset that she can't be Nicki's stunt double now? Because now they're just going to use a sex doll if they need it.
I didn't even think about that.
But I would be here for a Nicki Blac Chyna collaboration. I would be here for that.
What would it be? Music?
I wonder if the sex dolls are different nationalities and races. I hadn't thought about that.
They are. Well, I've heard.
Yeah.
I've read things.
For continuity.
But they already have them, though. Like, they have them. Now, maybe they have to, like, refashion them. What are they going to do? Well, they got to be different. They have to be. They didn't say that in the article. I didn't think about that. But
I would imagine there's ways to customize them, like Mr. Potato Head with a ween.
Yeah. I don't know. The bold and beautiful sex towels make me a little uncomfortable.
Make me a lot uncomfortable.
I'm a little uncomfortable with this now. So Nicki Minaj, and it sounds like they might work. Basically the story is that Blac Chyna wants to work with Nicki Minaj. Great. Well, in other news, I'd like to work with Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, there you go. Just put it out there.
I would like to work with a sex doll.
You want to work with a sex doll?
Yeah, well, sure.
See, you have realistic goals.
Put it on theblast.com and you never know what might happen.
I'm going to go work with one as soon as we're done recording this podcast.
All right. Well, that's why I'm uncomfortable with all this. You don't need to know that.
Well, let's get into this movie. Now, we are revisiting a movie. We are revisiting, because of what we explained last week, our lost episode, the fact that we recorded the movie The Wrong Neighbor, and it's disappeared into the ether. Yeah,
I couldn't even find my notes. I was hoping I wouldn't have to write down notes again. I could just refer to my old ones and watch the movie again, but I couldn't even find the notes.
No, I throw out all my notes.
I couldn't find it either. So we rewatched The Wrong Neighbor, and I gotta tell you guys, I enjoyed it even more.
I did too.
I didn't remember if I was watching. I was like, oh, okay.
And I forgot that this is supposedly based on a true story.
No, we had this conversation. I do remember this. We had the conversation on the last podcast because we watched this from a YouTube clip, not on like the official Lifetime site. Sometimes people that upload them will put those words in the title of the YouTube video because it helps it in the search engine, but it's not necessarily true. This is not a true story.
Okay.
There's no way this thing was a true story.
Well, in a way that I have to say good. I'm glad it's not a true story.
Because it is. I don't want to give away the ending.
No, there's a lot that happens in this movie.
I'm glad it's not a true story.
What I liked about this movie when we first watched it is I think it was the first really over-the-top, insane Lifetime movie we had watched, and it kind of opened our eyes to how fun these movies can be if they just throw all logic out the window. And it was really great seeing that after we've learn some of the tropes of these movies too.
And now I do have some criticisms, which we'll get into, but the criticisms are based on some of the tropes that maybe established themselves after this. Because I'm gathering this is one of the first ones.
Yeah, this is from like 2017, I think.
But yeah, so I do have some issues now with some of the things that happened just because of the tropes that I guess organically came into place. So let's start. Okay. So of course, it's a wrong movie, which means there's a cold open. So we're at a house. It's an older couple. There's someone frantically beating on their door. And since it's a wrong movie, guess what they're wearing? Yes, a black hoodie.
Oh, I didn't even pick up on that because I didn't think you... Oh, that's right. We do see the person at the door. Okay. Yeah.
And then because she's beating on the door and she's like, let me in. You're my family. And the guy, the older gentleman, has like a baseball bat, which is another wrong
trope. And how about that thing on the door? Like he had, it was like a giant like window he opened on the door that he was able to look through.
Oh yeah, they have like the giant peephole kind of like mini door. I've seen that before. I love this couple though because they seem like they probably played a married couple in like a Life Alert commercial or something.
Right.
They might be a married couple.
They might be.
I don't know.
Could be. Like friends of the producer or something? Because they didn't say much. Because they were just, didn't they just say, she's crazy?
Well, they're like, why is she doing this?
We do have actors who we're pretty sure there are some people who are like friends of the producers or like some like real estate agents.
Yes.
I'll also say there are also women who play like little tiny roles who like the producers are trying to hook up with.
I guarantee the hostess in the restaurant later in the movie was one of those.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah.
That's exactly the person I was talking about.
So it's the cold open, and then we cut to like I guess maybe a days later or weeks later, and then of course there's I see Michael Madsen's name and I just automatically start applauding.
Yeah,
was he first in the credits?
Yeah, he's top billed in this movie. And he's barely in it. Yeah.
Yeah, he's the biggest name. But
he was the Vivica A. Fox of this movie before the wrong series had Vivica A. Fox.
Right.
Exactly.
She's more versatile.
Or Eric Robert. Like, he's pre-Eric Roberts, too.
Yeah.
So then we see a mother and a daughter, and the daughter's in the living room, and she's sadly looking out of the window. And we see the dad, the mean dad from The Wrong Cheerleader. Remember the mean alcoholic dad that was digging in the dirt?
That was him?
That was him.
Yeah, it was. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, wow. Wow. Okay. So we've already created the wrong cinematic universe in this movie. I'm proud of them.
Right.
Wow. Can we talk about how fucked up it was though that like the dad and the mom like broke up and the mom and the daughter are sitting in the window like watching him pack his car? Like how sad is that? Like they couldn't go in another room?
Right.
Yeah, they should have gone to the movies or something while that was happening.
Right.
Go see Kramer versus Kramer or Marriage Story.
So the daughter's really sad, and the daughter starts yelling at her mom because she's blaming her mom for this breakup. And then we find out the mom's a lawyer because the mom says something, and the daughter says, spoken like a true lawyer. And then we cut to Pacific Palisades High. And they're in the computer lab. Lisa, who's the girl, is in the computer lab, and she's approached by her friend Penny.
She's staring at this hot jock across the lab.
Yeah. Lisa is like, oh, Penny's like, why haven't you called me? And Lisa's like, I have a lot on my plate. And Penny says, well, I will help you clear your plate, and walks away. Then we cut to Heather, the mom. And we find out that Heather is a tax attorney. And she's interviewing this guy who wants to start his own security company. And he says something awkward to her. Like, he says something about, what was it, like, being married or something.
He doesn't know what a tax attorney does. He says, what does a tax attorney do? But he's in her office. He has an appointment with a tax attorney.
Well, also,
so
like,
I guess that's for us, the audience.
Not for the sake of correcting you, but for the sake of context, Jules. He wasn't starting a security company. He's had a security company for a number of years, was getting ready to retire, and seemingly didn't know what a tax attorney was.
Oh, that's right. Patrick. Yeah.
Lazy writer. It's tough to find out what a tax attorney is. Like, we don't even have to know.
Wouldn't that be funny if Patrick just made appointments around town? Like, I don't know what a chiropractor is, but I'm going to go in there and ask them. I'm going to Google where to go to a chiropractor, but not Google the words, what is a chiropractor?
It's very proactive. Oh, I'm in the wrong place.
Wait, he's at the dentist? Like, why are you trying to stick tools in my mouth? Who are you?
Oh, that's what you are? Oh, I thought you were someone who read encyclopedias. Well, that was way off on this one.
So then we see the dad, Tim, moving into his divorced condo. And at first I thought it was going to be a sad little condo, but it was not a sad little divorced condo. It was actually like cute little condo.
That was nice. I liked it better than the house.
And now,
did you know he had a guitar? We never heard him play it, but he did have a guitar he brought in there.
He had a guitar because it's a single divorced dad thing to do.
I was hoping for some acoustic numbers in this, but no.
Now, I noticed this time around there were a lot of British people in this movie.
Were they Brits or Aussies?
You know what? They were Aussies. They were Aussies. Okay. Yeah. And there were a lot of them.
Yeah.
There were like four or five of them. So I'm wondering if the producer or somebody was Australian.
I would imagine.
Because maybe. Because Tim gets a call from his Australian friend, or actually his boss, who was actually pretty hot.
Oh, Nate was super hot.
And so after his phone call, we see that Tim is being watched. And then we cut to, and then they show the obligatory older dad, I've been moving boxes all day, I hurt my back, sort of a scene. Yeah. So then...
He's got to go to that chiropractor.
So then we cut to a bunch of food trucks. And we see this woman, and she's holding up the line, and she can't find her wallet. And so she's holding up the line. There are these two bitchy girls behind her that are pissed because she's holding up the line. And so then we see Tim, and Tim saunters over to the food truck and makes his move by buying her lunch.
Well, this must be an LA thing because we've seen this in another movie where the people get all dolled up, dressed, the makeup, hair, to go to a food truck.
The other one was for the opening of a new. The other one that we saw wasn't just they were going to a food truck. It was they were going to the opening of a coffee truck.
Oh, the coffee truck. Yeah. So it must be a West Coast thing.
It is not. Like the food truck thing is big out here, but they get like planning your day around going to one, not so much.
Because all these ladies were dressed. They were dressed up. They were dolled up to go to this food truck.
Yeah.
Like, even the two girls behind her were dolled up, too.
Yep.
So then he swoops in. Tim swoops in and buys her lunch, which there is no food truck that would have something that's only $10. I'm sorry.
Oh, she was kidding. She could be getting French fries. Yeah, if she got one thing, if she got like a burger.
Right.
Yeah.
So we find out her name is Jamie. And so Tim and Jamie are having a little flirtation. And then they find out that, oh my gosh, we live in the same building. Mm. So then we see that Jamie has watched the movie Legally Blonde because Jamie drops her keys and does the bend and snap. Remember the bend and snap?
No.
I do not either. Kirk, I did not like Legally Blonde.
No.
Okay.
I'm a bad guy.
So you guys, after done, you guys are going to go to YouTube and type in Legally Blonde, bend and snap. And it was a whole dance number on how you get a guy is you drop something, you bend down, and then you snap back up with your butt out. It's a thing. Trust me. And Jamie did the bend and snap perfectly. And so then, back at Palisades High, we see Lisa, the daughter, and she's being watched too with the menacing music. And so they make it look like, so she's in the locker room. She's doing the horror movie teen girl changing in the locker room. She's being watched. There's menacing music. But then we find out it's her boyfriend, Steve. Mm-hmm. So first of all, Steve was pretty bold to be hanging out in the girl's locker room.
They do that a lot in these Lifetime movies. Like, doesn't anyone see them go into the locker room of the opposite sex? Like, I would think somebody would raise a flag on that.
Right.
Because it's high school, so it's like, you know.
Yeah, he doesn't know who else is in there.
So Lisa's very depressed for good reason. Her parents are getting divorced, you know, so she's very depressed. And then we see the star of this movie, Michael Madsen.
Yes.
Michael Madsen looks very hungover. The character looks very hungover.
I don't know if it was the character.
That's nice of you to say.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't just, it was Michael Madsen. It was a tracksuit. It was about five more layers of clothing under said tracksuit. It was a visor and sunglasses and possibly a wig covering him indoors. It was a lot.
Yeah. No, I think that
was perfection.
I think that scene was shot straight after sleeping in the trailer.
Like, and his voice was groggy too. Like, yeah, like they woke him up and said, Michael, you're shooting.
Yeah, it sounds like Froggy from our gang.
Like, Michael, we've been waiting for you. We could find you. Like, some poor PA got yelled at.
He's chasing him, yeah. Wake up, Michael, wake up. I don't think he's not responding. Oh, yeah, no, he's okay. Michael, you have a guy to your scene now.
All right, I'm ready. The poor PA, like, got something thrown at them or something.
do you think that if Michael had shown up a little more ready to do this movie, that there wouldn't be a Vivica A. Fox wrong universe, that it would be Michael Madsen in every film? Like, if he had just shown up and like given it.
Yeah, I'd welcome seeing him something else, though. There is an essence that I enjoy of Michael Madsen. Oh,
I loved every moment of him in this movie. And I loved it even more this time around than I did the first time around.
I wonder what his qualifications are to become the swim instructor. Was he an Olympic swimmer, like, back in the day before his breakdown happened? Like, what's the character backstory?
Oh, you know Michael Madsen had a whole backstory prepared for this.
Sure he did.
Yeah, the backstory is I went drinking last night, allegedly. I love that every scene of him coaching, it's like him sitting in a folding chair right at the side of the fucking pool with a megaphone, even though he's right at the edge of the pool. And there's only one person in the pool at a time. Like, they're not going to be able to hear him without that fucking megaphone.
He must have heard that Dustin Hoffman stayed up all night for a scene of Marathon Man, so he decided that he would stay up for a week, so he'd be better than Dustin Hoffman, I guess.
I've been staying up all night.
That's what his voice sounded like.
It did, yeah.
So Lisa gets in trouble for running, because he's like, there's no running in the pool. And so he gives her 20 extra laps because she ran. And so
it's a very sports movie kind of speech that he gave her too about the running. It was almost like they tried to write him like a Field of Dreams style monologue to like give him a moment in the movie, and he just like rolled right over it.
I think he improv'd it.
Oh,
you are giving him a lot of credit. You are giving Michael Madsen a lot of credit for trying to carry this movie.
Yeah.
Well, because I could see him going, these lines are horrible, and like marking them out and then coming up with his own stuff.
Oh, maybe. Wow.
So
I think he's happy to be there.
So then we see Lisa and Heather, and Heather is taking Lisa to the therapist.
Is she Australian?
Okay, now I think she was Australian, and my note for this is this should have been Tracy Nelson.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I actually thought it was at first when she first walked out. I thought, was that Tracy Nelson? But
this is Tracy Nelson's part.
No wish fulfillment there.
This is Tracy Nelson.
Do we think that was an office building that the therapist was in, or is that the therapist's house? Because it looked like a giant mansion.
It looked like a house. But then, I don't know if you guys have heard of this, but there are some therapists that see people in their homes. Like, yeah. They have like an extra room or extra space.
Yeah.
And they see people in their homes. That's not unusual, actually.
That's how the woman on Ozark operated. She was in her house.
Maggie Seaver on Growing Pains.
See?
Oh no! Was it the dad? I think it was the dad that worked at home as a therapist.
Yeah, it was the dad. And then my notes here for the therapist, I put for my notes not Tracy Nelson.
No. Now that you pointed that out, that's all I'm going to be thinking about whenever we cut to the therapist's massive mansion estate. I'm just going to think, this could have been Tracy.
Right.
That's right.
So not Tracy Nelson is talking to Lisa, and you know, we find out that Lisa is very anti her mom and very pro her dad. She's team dad on this thing. Because she feels that her dad gave up his life to be a house husband for the mom, and she thinks the mom is selfish. And so then we find out that Tim's involved in opening of a restaurant, and we find out that the opening of the restaurant has been pushed back a week. And while they're discussing this, they're being watched by Jamie. And so as Tim's talking to Lisa and giving her a little pep talk, we hear, we then cut to Tim swimming. And as Tim is swimming, there's menacing music, like someone's gonna kill him. But it's Jamie.
Wait, Tim's swimming?
It's Jamie. Oh, no, sorry. Lisa was swimming.
Lisa's swimming first, yeah.
Lisa's swimming, and there's menacing music. Lisa's swimming, and it's Jamie.
Jamie says, no, I'm not, you heard this too.
Yes.
She says she doesn't know how to swim. She says, I don't know how to do, I can't even say it, doggy style.
Wrote it right here.
Me too. Right here in the Now that was an improv the day of. That was something she was probably joking around on set there. And then did it for a take, and they're like, yeah, let's leave that in. She's kind of nuts. She would say that.
Right. So then Jamie is doing something which is another trope in the wrong movies. She's mining for info. And so she's talking to Lisa. She's buttering her up. She's, you know, like, yeah, girl, I get it. I get where you're coming from. And she sees a bruise on Jamie's arm. And she, you could tell that she jumps to the conclusion that Lisa's boyfriend is abusing her.
Now, do you really think Jamie was buttering her up? Because I feel like she was going in without any butter. Like, I feel like she was just going in and asking really intrusive questions with no on-ramp whatsoever.
You mean she wasn't goal-oriented, or?
She wasn't very subtle in the slightest about fishing for information. It was like she pulled out the fishing pole right in front of Lisa and just flung it at her.
Yeah, she dove right in.
Yeah.
Yeah, she didn't waste any time.
I gave a lot of metaphors for how one could fish for information.
This woman, because this woman is really super hot, but she's convincing in the way that she's nutty, so she's scary.
Yeah, like, I think she comes off to everyone she encounters, with, for some reason, the exception of Tim, everyone she encounters, she comes off as just bonkers, like, moment one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has she been in anything else? Is she from some kind of soap opera or something?
I wonder if she's been in other Lifetime movies.
I'm going to look right
now. Or Hallmark. I haven't seen her on soaps or anything.
Let's see.
The woman who plays the mom is also very hot, but she's a shade more wholesome.
No, I recognize her.
I do too. She looks
similar. I recognize her.
Who was Jamie? Jamie was Ashlyn Yenny. Let's look up Ashlyn's IMDb right here and see what she's been in. Please hold.
She's probably done some modeling. But I would say that in the IMDb, I guess.
So she's in a Lifetime movie called Killer Cheerleader, which is different than the one. What was the one we just watched?
We saw a different
one. Was that Psycho Cheerleader?
The wrong cheerleader.
So there's another cheerleader movie.
Killer Cheerleader.
That's in post right now. Here are some of the Lifetime ones. The Wrong Mommy, Hidden Intentions, The Wrong Neighbor. You got very excited when I said Hidden Intentions.
We watched The Wrong Mommy.
Did we?
The Wrong Mommy?
We may
Didn't
have.
Didn't we watch The Wrong Mommy? What?
I don't think so.
What was the one where the woman had the mother captive and she was making her express her milk and she put it in the refrigerator because she stole her life and stole her baby? And so she had the mom in the basement and was making the mom like...
Oh, God.
Remember that one?
I do, but this I don't think this is that. This is the synopsis of The Wrong Mommy, and maybe we'll have to watch this sometime. After receiving a promotion and more responsibility at work, Melanie decides to hire Phoebe as her personal assistant, smart and cunning. Phoebe has an ulterior motive for taking the job and a twisted plan for revenge involving Melanie's mother.
All right. That might be in our future.
We need to watch this. It's on the list.
Oh, right. we watched the wrong stepmother. We watched the wrong stepmother.
Oh, yes, that sounds right.
Okay. Okay. So then Penny, Lisa's best friend, shows up. And Penny is not having Jamie, and Jamie is not having Penny.
Bogo was amazing.
And Penny like immediately figures out that Jamie is a freak, and Jamie tries to step up to Penny, and Penny is not backing down at all.
An example of what I was just talking about of like how Jamie from moment one just presents as I'm insane. Like she meets Penny, walks up, starts talking to Lisa, and Jamie gets offended, like, who are you? Even though Jamie just met Lisa, like, moments earlier. Why would she be offended that this person's friend walked up?
She says, why are you here?
Penny was being really nice.
And Penny's response was, who are you again?
She goes, you're weird.
amazing.
And then, so basically Penny and Jamie get into it. Penny leaves. But then Lisa kind of defends Jamie. And so Penny's kind of like, okay, you know what? I'm done with you. So then Tim, I guess, goes out for the evening. And so then Jamie breaks into the house. And so then she goes on Tim's bed and starts rolling around like a cat. And then so then we're at the restaurant. Tim's cooking. And then it cuts back to Jamie. And then Jamie goes in the bathroom and takes his toothbrush and starts brushing her teeth with it.
And then puts it back in the cup without rinsing it off.
I think when we did this before, I told you guys about the urban legend. I hate to go through this again, but it's that somebody comes home and everything is stolen from their house except for their toothbrush and a roll of film, and they have the film developed. It's pictures of a guy putting the toothbrush up his butt.
Ew.
Oh, thank God I got to tell that urban legend again. We thought it was lost forever.
Ew,
I need to uphold the culture.
Well, thank you for reinserting that piece of information into the annals of history.
That's right.
Right? So then we cut back to the restaurant, and Lisa's there, like, helping out. And she gets a call from Penny, but she ignores it. And then we cut back to Lisa. Cut back to Jamie, and she's back. She's still in the house, and she's walking around. And then she picks up a picture of Heather, Lisa, and Tim, and she scratches at Heather.
She doesn't pick it up. She was in the closet and pulled it out of a box of family photos.
She had a sore throat. The picture looked like it was just taken yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then we cut back to the restaurant, and Tim is, like, I guess, trying out food on Lisa, and she's eating the ravioli, and she asks him, did you put crack in that sauce?
Well, of course.
And then I wonder if this was the beginning of the trope of we see Lisa, Jamie, and she's on the laptop, and she's putting, like, spyware in the laptop.
With the largest font known to man on the screen so that the older audience watching at home knows remote video stream. It's like 72 point font in the middle of the screen. It says remote video stream starting. Anyway, and you know that, like, the note they got after this movie was like, that font was way too big. But you know what isn't too big? Cameras in the house. The rest of the wrong movies are going to feature an oversized spy camera.
Right, yeah, you know, there's a boardroom where they had to discuss this.
Yeah.
That discussion.
Like, how did this work this time? So then Lisa and Tim come home from work, from Tim working. And so they start watching a movie on the laptop, and as they're watching this movie and laughing, Jamie is watching them watch the movie.
That's one of the funniest movie ever. It looked like, so they actually showed part of the movie. It was a dog doing something, and they're laughing. They're laughing like this is the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Right before this moment, too, like, Tim and Lisa were talking about Jamie, and Lisa describes Jamie as super chill. Which literally nothing about, even if she didn't think Jamie was crazy, literally nothing about Jamie was chill.
Just super chill.
Nothing. So, meanwhile, Heather calls Penny looking for Lisa. And Penny is like, you know what? She's hanging out with this freak and gives Heather the whole rundown on Jamie. So then we see Tim and Heather, and they're having a therapy session with not Tracy Nelson, and they're fighting. So then we see Tim, he's swimming, and Jamie shows up in a very ugly bikini. So she pretended like she couldn't swim, and so she got Tim to give her a swimming lesson, and we had a sexy swimming montage. Mm. And so, which ended with them kissing in the pool. And so then they're sitting on the lounges talking, and we find out that Jamie has dead parents.
I see dead.
Dead. Exactly. Her mother and her father. Mm-hmm. So then they start doing this thing. They're talking, they start drumming. And then it cuts to they're still drumming, but they're in a sushi restaurant drumming and doing shots. Oh, they're doing sake bombs.
Yeah.
And then Jamie throws out that I bet I'm more fun than your wife. And then she gets Tim drunk.
She also says, if you had the right wife, you'd have fun. Like, who... I get that Jamie's nuts and intrusive, but like, you're on a not even first date with this guy, and you're already floating the idea of like, you should get married to me.
Yeah,
right.
And she assumes that she knows his wife. She's like, your wife doesn't know you. She isn't fun. How do you know?
Exactly. How do you know, Jamie? So then Tim's drunk. They go back to his place. They start making out. She starts taking selfies. And then Tim's kind of like, you know, I can't do this now. And he's kind of passing out, too. And so she's taking all sorts of selfies as he's, like, wasted and passing out. And so then Jamie gets mad here, right?
Yeah, well, because he's passing out, and she's basically trying to get him naked and trying to have sex with him, and he starts out, like, resisting, but not really, because he's drunk, but then he eventually is like, no, I can't, and then she gets mad.
Right, and then she storms out, and then the next day, she leaves at the pool, and Steve, her boyfriend, shows up, and Jamie just shows up and starts, like, yelling at him. Yelling at him and accusing him of abuse.
Now, not that I'm...
Well, the boyfriend shows up, yeah.
Yeah, you're probably going to say the same thing I was.
Yeah, I was going to say, why does he show up just in a bathing suit?
Right.
He was ready to swim? Did he get changed in his car? Or what happened?
It was weird, because, like... He allegedly didn't even know where she lived and just shows, like, and then he shows up shirtless. Like, what? Not that I'm complaining, but it made no sense as to why he needed to be shirtless for that scene.
Yeah, it did not look bad.
No.
It did not look bad.
I was not mad about it.
But then Jamie shows up, does like a Charlie's Angel move, and does like judo on him.
Well, she does how's it pronounced?
Krav Maga.
She does that on. They used to advertise that in the Village Voice. Krav Maga lessons.
Steve, but if you haven't seen the movie, Steve is this. He's supposed to be a high school kid, but he's a very muscular guy. Like, he's a big guy, way bigger than the Jamie and Lisa combined. And yet somehow, tiny little Jamie is able to like put him in this like arm hold to like he's like shaking it off like he's in a massive amount of pain. Like she just beat the shit out of him.
Right.
What an advertisement. So then Lisa, my God. Mm-hmm.
Right. And then so now Lisa's kind of pissed, mm-hmm. but then Jamie like gives her beers. Like she gives her beers and then she takes her out shooting.
And not at a shooting range, right? Like, this wasn't a gun range.
No, it was in the backyard.
Yeah, because there were, like...
up by the pool.
There were no targets. There was no protective gear. Like, none of that. She's just like, let's just go... Like, they're in a pretty suburban neighborhood with condo buildings around, and they just go out back and start shooting guns in the yard.
Like you know, they're in a condo complex where people would be like, wouldn't you be like, that sounds like there's a gun outside.
Oh, that's just Jamie.
It was in the common area.
Yeah.
It was in the common area of the condo.
Well.
And then
there's a couple shooting, next to them playing ping pong, and they just keep shooting the ping pong ball. It's flying across.
And then Jamie's like, Lisa, picture someone you hate, like Steven. And Lisa's like, I don't hate him. And then Lisa kind of starts flipping out a little. So then Jamie then shows up at the restaurant. And, you know, so she's flirting with Tim, you know, getting her mitts on him. And then they're at school at Pacific Palisades High, and Jamie just, like, shows up at school. And Lisa's like, what the hell? Like, why are you here? I'm at school. And then Jamie's trying to get her to cut swim practice, and Lisa's like, I like swim practice. And so then...
I like having Michael Madsen sit at the side of the pool and yell at me through a megaphone. Duh.
Yes. And he's sitting down. He's sitting next to the pool. And once again, he looks like he had a hard night last night. Yeah.
he made me want to clear my throat.
How many days do you think he shot?
Like yelling at her like, go, go.
Because I bet you he only did one day of filming on this, and all the really haggard scenes, which is most of the movie, was shot before lunch. And the scene at the end of the movie was after lunch, like after he'd eaten, after the hangover kind of died down, allegedly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, ready for more scenes.
Because I was wondering if at one point, like maybe the scene started out with him standing up, and at one point they're like, you know what, Michael, get him a chair.
As long as he has those.
He was looking at the water getting seasick.
Get him a chair. You know, it's late in the day. Get him a chair. But, you know, as long as he has glasses on, they could do cue cards because you can't see his eyes.
Yeah.
For most of the movie. So he was probably doing cue cards. Man.
Well, it's not like he was giving monologues or anything.
Oh, he gave an inspirational speech
earlier. Remember? Field of Dreams.
A motivational speech. And then he pushed her in the pool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Because then he says, don't surrender, don't retreat, never give up. Like she's like in World War II or something.
When he shoved her in the pool, do you think he shoved her in the pool, or do you think that Michael Madsen was losing his balance and trying to grab onto her?
I'll go with the second.
Yeah.
And then they're like, leave it in.
We're losing light.
Move on. We'll move on, everybody. We're moving on to the next scene. Well, she fell in the pool. That's fine.
So
we're losing Mike. We're losing Mike.
Right? Because, you know, they probably have like 10 days to shoot this thing.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if Tom Sizemore is the tennis instructor.
Oh man, this school would be amazing.
Right. Okay. So then we're at Heather's house. Tim shows up because I guess Lisa forgot something. And so then Tim and Heather start to talk. They're having coffee. They're actually getting along. And then we see that Jamie followed him. And so, like, they're starting this. You can see they're kind of starting to forgive each other and soften up to each other. And so Heather's like, I'll come to your opening, but I will only come to your opening if Jamie isn't there. And so Tim is like, okay, fine. And so Jamie's out front skulking around. And so Tim leaves.
How did Jamie hear very clearly every word of their conversation when they were inside and she is outside?
Now, okay. I was thinking the same thing. Did she have a bug in his phone too?
I mean, maybe, but even if she did, like, it would be mute, you know, muffled by being in his pocket or whatever. But like, it was crystal clear, like she was in the room.
Right, and they were like in the living room, and she was outside behind the bushes, yeah. And not like right next to the house behind the bushes. She was a little away behind the bush.
Maybe the house is not very well insulated. She could put her ear to the outside wall.
Yeah. They should have shown a scene with Jamie and a glass at the wall trying to listen.
Right.
Oh, I see. Mm.
So then Tim texts Jamie, you know, hey, why didn't you come on another day? Jamie's pissed because she already knows what's going on. And so then we get to the opening. And Heather and Lisa show up at the opening, and this is where they meet the hostess that you two think is probably either the producer or the director's girlfriend.
Yeah, and that to be fair, that's not to say that her performance is bad. She only has one line, but it was a line and a moment in the movie which was not necessary whatsoever. She literally just comes over and comments on Tim's cooking with this Australian accent, and she says her line and she walks away. Like, it was not necessary in the movie. Not only should it have been left on the editing floor, it didn't need to be in the script.
Yeah.
And it's more common than you think, because I had a friend who, she's dating this guy, and so he's like, you want your SAG card? I'll get you your SAG card. And it was some TV show, and this is years ago, and it was some TV show, and he wrote in a little part to her where she's going, hot dogs, and that's how she got her SAG card.
Yeah.
So
it happened.
If they're really hot, when I was doing non-union extra work, and one day this woman started doing extra work as well, and this woman was like super hot. Well, she was in the union in about a month or so, and when I did Wall Street 2, the whole scene was Michael Douglas giving a speech. They put her like practically right in front of him, so he was giving a speech to her. I don't know what she's doing now, but.
And the thing is, because I remember when I first moved to L.A., I had this roommate who was really hot. She had no desire to be an actor whatsoever. She was actually in veterinary school. And her side job was like she waited tables. She had guys like offering her parts, offering her walk-ons. And it was funny because I'm sitting here watching this and like, I'm like, okay, you have no desire to do this. And you have people like throwing gigs at you. So it happened.
Did she do it?
No, she didn't. She had no desire. I think she's a veterinarian now. She had no desire to be in front of the camera. And she grew up here. She was from here. And so, you know, when you're from here and you see it, entire life, sometimes you're kind of like, just it doesn't phase you in the least.
Yeah.
So yeah, she didn't do it. What was I? Oh, so they're at the opening, and then Jamie shows up at the opening, even though she was told not to come. And Heather is not having it. Heather steps up to her. Tim's boss is not happy about this. Tim then goes to come. Things down. Heather is going to kick Jamie's ass. And then they go outside because Heather seriously like calls her outside, like, let's go.
And then Jamie says, age before beauty, as they're walking out.
Right. Right. Even though Heather was not that much older than Jamie.
And then once they're outside, then she says to her, you do look older than you do in your pictures. Well, maybe the pictures were taken 10 years ago. Actually, right. They weren't.
Jamie are getting into it outside, Heather is like trying to kind of like talk herself up, and she goes, there is nothing you could do that will shake this woman's confidence.
Right? this woman.
It's like the yeah, they're sort of referring or kind of in third person.
But
she will not be beaten down.
Jamie did shake her confidence, though, because Jamie showed her selfies with her and Tim, the drunk selfies. But they looked like Tim was like, she's like, here's your husband kissing my neck. And she gave like blow-by-blow descriptions of the selfies. So Heather was shaken up a little bit. And then the hot Australian boss is yelling at Tim in the kitchen. Because this was his opening, and this was like his make or break, and it was a packed house.
But isn't it exciting for the people who are eating there? It's like they're eating in a Lifetime movie.
I would love to. It's, oh my God. You know?
Like Lifetime could do a pop-up restaurant that's sort of like an Ed DeBevix meets Lifetime movies. Right. Where like everything that's happening while you're eating is some sort of bonkers aspect of a Lifetime movie.
It'd be awesome.
Because I tell you what, there's nothing I love more than like a big fight or a big argument in public or a restaurant that I'm not involved in and I can just sit back and watch. I eat that shit up.
I don't know if I ever told this story on the podcast before, but I was at an IHOP. This is years ago. It's like right when like having a smartphone was kind of a new thing. And we were, it was like 3 a.m. We had been out drinking. And all of a sudden we hear this commotion in the back of the IHOP. And then we see one of those metal coffee carafes go flying through the air. And then this girl just like gets up and she's like, don't fuck this up for me. I have to fly to Kentucky tomorrow. And just storms out of the restaurant. And I wish it had been now that that happened because I would have had amazing video of that.
Right. I love a good restaurant fight that I'm watching.
I just want to know what was going to get fucked up if she didn't make it to Kentucky.
Right?
3 o'clock in an IHOP. We never know.
To Kentucky. Okay. So after Tim's boss yelled at him, we see Jamie in an empty parking lot screaming like an idiot. Yeah. Like she's just screaming. So then Tim and Heather are like fighting. They're going at it on the phone. And then we see Heather and she has a meeting with Patrick, her client from the beginning of the movie, who didn't know what a tax attorney was.
Even though he runs a security firm.
Now he knows.
Yeah.
Now he knows because she
told
Heather decides to get nosy. And so she offers Patrick free services in exchange for his expertise. And I'm sure tax attorneys are not cheap. So I'm sure he was very happy to do this.
Right.
Because this is what he does anyway. So then we see Lisa. She's at home. Jamie's watching her on the laptop. She calls Lisa. Lisa ignores the call. Jamie's pissed. Then we're back at the pool. We see Steven approaches Lisa, and he's like, who was that weird lady? And I guess, Jason, it's after lunch because we see Michael. No sunglasses. Mm-hmm. His voice is clear. He's a whole new man.
Yeah.
He wasn't wearing sunglasses?
No, he wasn't.
Okay.
Same tracksuit, though.
It's like one shot in a chair, and it's just him sitting in the chair, and he's just yelling, like, what's going on? I wrote, economy shooting.
Yeah.
So then Jamie, meanwhile, is lurking. And so Lisa's talking to Penny, and like they make up, and they're friends again. And Lisa is telling Penny how, you know, Jamie's a freak. And so we see Steve. He's on the phone. He's walking through the parking lot. And then all of a sudden, out of like a comedy skit, he gets, like, just plowed over by Jamie in her car.
Yeah. I wonder if that was one of those Bold and the Beautiful dummies who they used in that scene to get hit.
Oh, R.I.P. sex doll.
Because it literally was like an empty parking lot, and she just went like, boosh, and she just like ran over him.
And then she like ran over him again, didn't she? Like after she hit him, didn't she? Then didn't you hear the car kind of bump when she went the other direction?
Yeah. She didn't want to take any chances.
She had to make sure the job was done.
Car inspection is going to be a bitch.
Yeah.
So then we see Lisa talking to not Tracy Nelson, and then she goes out to the car, and Tim has a sad look on his face. And then we cut to Steve's funeral. Jamie did him in. And so they're at the funeral, and Jamie is in her car with a fabulous pair of cool-looking binoculars looking at the funeral. So then, you know, of course, Lisa's upset. And then we cut to Patrick. And first we see Jamie taking out her garbage. And then we see Patrick, and Patrick goes and gets the garbage. And then he wants to get a DNA profile done.
Oh.
And this is where she did him in, right?
Well, no, Jamie walks out, and he pretends he's on the phone with somebody. Like, oh, yes, that's right. Yes, that's right. Yep. And she goes back in, and he goes through their garbage.
Yeah. And he calls somebody to get
him in yet.
Yeah. Do you think that when he gets the DNA profile done, that he's going to find out that he's related to you, Les?
Could be. Could be.
You have to meet up with her. You have to meet up with
him. So, Tim's like getting a food order, and he's in the back. He's in like the back of the restaurant. The food order's coming in, and then Jamie shows up, and she's wearing like this red outfit, and she's not having it.
She didn't just show up, by the way. She was literally sitting at a picnic table right by the door, like inconspicuously in her bright red sexy dress. And then when the delivery guy goes in the restaurant, then she like gets up. And it's a surprise to Tim that she's there. Like, she's been sitting there the entire time.
A red outfit with a choker, with a matching choker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so then I like the boss, the hot Australian boss, because what do you say? Why are all these the best looking ones crazy? Then he tells Tim, he's like, you need to make this go away. So then we see Heather. She's talking to not Tracy Nelson. And then we basically find out that they want to get back. Tim and Heather want to get back together.
Yeah.
You know, so they start talking about reconciliation with not Tracy Nelson. But then they walk out. And we see Heather's car, and Heather's car is thrashed.
Yeah.
So,
which she took pretty well. She was taking this pretty. She was very zen. This wife.
Not as zen as Tim was.
She's great in church.
First, she's a little upset, but then she's kind of like, oh, I don't mind renting a car for a while.
Tim was less fazed by it than Heather was, because Heather is like kind of pissed off that that Jamie did this, and Tim's like, we can't prove it was her.
Like,
it could have been my spiteful sister. I don't know.
So then. We are at the swim meet. Mm-hmm. And this is probably Michael Madsen's final scene of the day.
Yeah.
This is where he didn't have glasses on.
And he didn't have his jacket on either. There's he didn't have the red shirt.
No sunglasses, no hat, no track jacket. This is some likely contractually obligated serious shit happening here.
Yeah.
He probably had some lunch. Some crafty, a bunch of coffee,
Oh, yeah. A talk with his agent that he's not going to get paid if he doesn't take the sunglasses off.
I think the coffee station definitely got a lot of use that day.
He had a nap in the trailer.
I'll say.
He was good.
If he didn't have a nap in the trailer, he'd be dead. I almost didn't say that. That was mean.
And he was very lively. Where he meets Tim and Heather, he's very energetic.
Is that cool that while a swim race is going on, he's yelling and that, what's that called?
The megaphone?
Funnel.
The megaphone.
He's like, okay, go. It's like, isn't that kind of like distracting for the other people?
I like the fact that fucking Nate was at the swim meet. Why was Nate there?
That's the funniest thing. They threw in all the auxiliary characters. That's the right word, right? Auxiliary. Yeah. All the auxiliary characters get thrown in the bleachers.
Penny. And then Mike Madsen he gives the parents a lecture.
Patrick was there.
Oh yeah, that's right. When they walk in, he's like, "Are you the parents?" He's like, I forget. Basically, says that Lisa's a good kid.
He yells at them.
Get it together or something.
You're separated. What are you doing together? I thought you were separated. Right? I got the wrong information. I think I have another kid. It was another kid whose parents are separated. Oh no! Yeah, it was you and you together. This gets too confusing. Stop.
I just woke up.
What's the Phelps face?
What's the
Phelps face? He asked her to make the Phelps face.
I think Michael Phelps was known for this kind of face that he made when he was like in the zone. I think it's something like that.
Oh.
Basically saying like, be like Michael Phelps and swim faster.
Make the Phelps face.
And Lisa wins. Yeah. She wins. She wins the swim meet.
And nobody is happier than Nate.
We're all winners. Right.
So then they have like a party. Like they have a party. Everyone's there.
Yep.
Jamie's pissed.
She looks rather macabre. She's looking out the window. Right. She's following them around wherever they go.
And then this is where we see Patrick again, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We see Patrick.
I think he was in the bleachers.
Yeah, he was sitting next to the therapist. Next to not Tracy Nelson.
Yeah, therapist.
In fact, if you look really closely, Vivica A. Fox and Eric Nelson are in the bleachers, and that's how they got hired to do the rest of the Wrong movies.
Yeah.
Right?
They stopped by
to visit.
They're like, Vivica, you already have your SAG card. You don't need to be here.
But we need our insurance hours.
You came for lunch. Exactly. I get one more hour. I got my health insurance. Man. The health insurance is good.
So Patrick gets killed.
Well, hold on. You jumped ahead a little bit there.
First, he inexplicably walks into a house. He's at a house where Jamie used to live.
Yeah.
And I guess no one lives there anymore, even though the house is completely furnished. So he just walks in. He walks in and he finds a family photo that's literally cut like old school cut and paste. Like she cut out like a black and white photo of her head and put it
over Heather's,
where the wife is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he gets in the car to call Heather and Warner. And then
she's like the samurai. She pulls out a samurai sword like she's a Belushi in SNL.
Yeah, why the hell did she have a sword? Because it wasn't like a regular knife, was it? It was a sword of some sort.
No,
it was big. It was like a shiv.
It was like a 6-foot thing, like she was a pirate.
It just stabbed him through the back of the car seat.
Arg! It's gonna be hard to dispose of that murder weapon.
So then we get to Heather and Tim, and they're like making up, and Tim's gonna move back in, like they're reconciling.
Yeah, well, did he sign a lease with this place, or now he's gonna sublet it for a year, or what?
How's sublet it, or maybe sublet it to Nate or something.
Sublet to Jamie. I guess there's a lot of people to choose from.
Yeah. And so, okay,
the hostess at the restaurant.
There's all kinds of people.
Right? So then Tim gets a call from Jamie. And Tim's like, you need to get yourself some help. And Jamie's like, well, you need to come to blah, blah, blah. Like, she gives him an address.
No, she just said, come to my place. She gives the address to Heather later on. But
she stole a photo.
Yeah, she admits to A, trashing the car. And Tim's like, well, you need to get help. And then she admits to taking the photo out of the closet, and he needs to get it right now. She's like, I won't be there. Just come get it. I feel bad. Like, come get it.
It's like, no, don't.
I just let her keep it. Yeah.
So Tim goes over to Jamie's house, and there's a picture with an X out of Heather, like Heather's X'd out of it. And then the laptop is there, and the laptop is on, and the laptop is playing like
it's
video.
The video of Lisa making a sandwich from like earlier in the movie. Tim's looking at this like, what the fuck
is
this?
And then laughing. And then laughing at Old Yeller or whatever that movie was. Yeah. The dog at the end. That was funny.
And that's when you're supposed to turn around and leave the house.
You're not supposed to walk in the first place. Oh.
Tim walks close to the laptop and gets hit in the head. Mm-hmm. So then we see Penny and Lisa. They're friends again. Penny's dropping Lisa off. Lisa comes home. She walks in. And then we have another wrong trope. Chloroform. Because you know what? In a wrong movie, you can always get chloroform.
I'm glad you said it, because I'm seriously worried that my search engines are going to think that I'm doing something because I kept saying that word in the last episode.
Yeah. Your iPhone will hear that.
Yeah.
Chloroform. Yeah, we see it so much that I am starting to get... I'm starting to get interested in it. Like... Is there a science to it? You know, do you have to hold it in someone's face for a certain amount of time, or?
Well, they always have them in like napkins,
mm-hmm. in a rag or something.
Well, it's in a rag because they need to inhale the fumes from it. Yeah. I just feel like Lifetime should make like their own branded, like, you know, like wet wipes, like towelettes, but like their own Lifetime branded chloroform packets that you could just buy at CVS.
Exactly. That's what Hallmark
does. Every movie.
With their ornaments and stuff. Yeah. Hallmark always show their ornaments and stuff. And we have to go buy those at a Hallmark store. Lifetime could do the same thing.
Yeah. Lifetime swag is chloroform packets, samurai swords, wigs, right. Like Vivica's wigs. They could sell those there.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. And this is where Jamie calls Heather, and Jamie's like, Heather, I have your family at 1313 Mockingbird Lane, or whatever the address was.
Yeah. Was it the Munsters address?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And I like the episode of the Munsters where they're Mr. and Mrs. Munster are talking about Marilyn. I always felt Marilyn was kind of strange.
Right? And they were like, oh, poor Marilyn. She's so unfortunate looking. Poor thing. She's, or like, yeah, she's a little, that poor Marilyn. She's a little homely. And Marilyn's beautiful. Oh, okay. So then we see Lisa, she's waking up, she's tied up, and Jamie walks in with a cake.
Yeah,
it looked great.
It really did. I want a cake.
And then, okay, I wrote here restraining order. Do you guys remember?
No, I don't see. There was she said that her parents had a restraining order on her.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then Tim
wakes
up. Because
that's her parents' house. They're in her parents' house. Oh. Yeah.
So then Tim wakes up. And then Jamie gives the psycho monologue that they always get.
Because the parents have a restraining order on her, are they like upstairs in a room to stay away from her?
No, I think they're dead.
I see dead people.
Oh, they're dead, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, she said they're dead, but I don't know. Okay.
They're probably in the basement or something. So Jamie's giving her monologue, like the psycho monologue. Then Heather jumps in. Because Heather shows up. Heather and Jamie fight. And then the cake is there. And Kirk, so you said that you were worried about the cake?
I was in the movie Black Swan. There's a scene in Black Swan where they almost throw out a cake. But this cake, I think, was in excellent, was in the safety zone. And I was very excited about this cake.
So then they're fighting. Jamie and Heather are fighting. Jamie gets a knife. She's getting ready to stab Heather. And then Lisa shoots Jamie. And I wrote here, do you know what was missing in this scene? She needed to say, you messed with the wrong neighbor.
Yeah,
that's right. It's funny she referenced Sophie's Choice, which, boy, that's balls.
Right?
Yeah.
She goes, right? This is, who should I kill first? It's a real Sophie's Choice. Also, she decides, like, who's she going to kill first? Now, the father is like, kill me, kill me, kill me. So that means the daughter's got to watch him, her father, die.
Yeah.
The right. Proper thing was he should have said, you know, kill her first. That way she doesn't have to see him be killed. Kill her, kill her, well, kill her.
I also like what he was trying to say. Like, you know, he was trying to say, kill me, because, like, you know, maybe the daughter will somehow have a chance to live if he's killed first. But when he says that, Jamie says to him, keep your shirt on, which was the only time in this movie I disagreed with Jamie.
Right.
The guy keeps his shirt on in this movie.
I would have been like, take your shirt off and shut the fuck up.
No, if she said, keep your shirt on. If she says, keep your shirt on to Michael Madsen, no one's going to argue.
Right. No, no, please keep it on. Because the guy had like one of these looks, like he was kind of like grizzled but sexy.
Oh, yeah. He had hot daddy vibes going on.
Oh.
Not Michael Madsen, yes. The dad.
So then Lisa shoots Jamie. Then we see Jamie getting taken away, handcuffed to the stretcher, saying, I thought you guys were my family.
What a shot. She shoots her in the shoulder, too. Like, whoa.
Yeah.
Well, that's because Jamie shot her how to shoot, taught her how to shoot.
Yeah, that's three shots she shot at beer cans, and that's it. The fourth time is the charm.
So then we cut to an asylum, and we see the therapist, and the therapist is talking to this patient.
Who says German, of course. It's like a Freudian therapist or something. And he's Freud German. Am I wrong on that? I probably am. I can't remember.
No, I think he is.
He was.
Or Austrian or German. So then he's talking to Jamie.
He was at the swim meet.
Saying, no.
Someone look that up. I'll look it up.
Okay.
He said, and Jamie's saying, no, not Jamie, I'm not Jamie. And it cuts to Jamie, and it's not Jamie. And she's like, trying to explain, I was an orderly. This day was my first day. She hit me in the head. And then we look over and we see Jamie dressed as an orderly.
Yeah.
And Jamie is like, she's lying. Oh, and the doctor's like, take her to the padded room. So then Jamie's like, I'm going to take her to the padded room. And then I'm leaving. And that was the end.
So nobody knew this woman. There was this woman's first day on the job.
Yes.
Or, so it's probably before she got like her ID and stuff. Because you know how your first day, like.
Nobody interviewed her for the job? Okay, I guess it's.
Well, or maybe like it's in shift. So it's like it's a different shift.
Oh, okay. That explains it. Freud is Austrian. He was Austrian. Okay. He's no longer with us.
Well, I would not.
We'd like to dedicate this episode in memory of Freud, who just turned to died.
And that was it. Like I said, I enjoyed this movie even more than the first time we watched it.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
And
because I forgot most of it.
So I guess after this movie, a universe was born. Right.
I like it.
I think, though, if they would have had Tracy Nelson in it, and they would have like figured out something for Vivica to do just so she could say, you mess with the wrong neighbor, it would have been perfect.
Well, even though I have obviously loved the existence of Michael Madsen in this movie, I think if they made this now, it would be Vivica as the coach.
Yeah.
She'd either be the coach or... Who else could she be? She would either be the coach or she'd be the Patrick role. She'd be like the PI.
Oh, yeah, but then she'd get killed, though. You can't kill Vivica Fox.
Oh, they would never get killed in these movies.
They would change it up. She would get stabbed, but then come back so she could say the line at the end of the movie.
Right. And she'd have a short wig for this.
Yeah. They could also rework the restaurant owner.
And, oh, yeah.
She could play that role.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think you're doing it like, you better get it together. You better.
Oh, yeah. Who's that crazy? I totally woman? Think you're doing it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, you need to get it together. Like, I could. Because a lot of times she's not in the full. Like, she's only in a couple of scenes anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, unless she is the lead, she's not in the movie at all, really.
Now, if she was the restaurant owner, then she'd have a long, curly wig, like one of her big hair wigs.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Because that means she means business. Anyway, gentlemen, I'm exhausted.
I'm energized. I love that. I love talking about that movie again because it's spectacular.
I'm exhausted in a good way. And I'm good exhausted.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
So, well, anything else?
I don't think so. I think we covered it all.
All right. So, if you want to get a hold of me, you can get a hold of me on Facebook at Les Kirkendall Barrett, or you can find me on my website, leskirkendallbarrett.com. Jason.
You can find all of us on Instagram at Lifetime of Hallmark Podcast, and you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Big Shot Jason. Kurt?
Well, I think we're on Twitter, too. We have a Twitter account.
Yes, we have a new Twitter handle.
Wait, we do? What? Huh? What? Huh?
A Lifetime? Yes. Yeah, a Lifetime of Hallmark.
Are we posting there?
No. That's our Twitter
handle. I haven't. I don't post on my own. I will.
I just established it a couple of days ago.
Okay.
So yeah,
you can find me on Twitter too. You can find me at KurtFitzpatrick.com, and I'm doing sketch comedy on. I'm writing and performing it on a Fringe live stream, which is broadcasting every Thursday night. So if you go on Facebook or look for Fringe live stream, if all goes well, and I keep up my productivity, the airing. Sketches, like I should be doing 2 sketches a week.
And of course, please, whatever platform you're listening to us on, give us a review. We would love 5 stars. And also, if you happen to be a soap opera fan, you can catch my other podcast, Soap Opera Love in the Afternoon, where me and my co-host Jordan Hudson, formerly from the Pine Valley Podcast, discuss soaps. We discuss all of the American soaps, and now, as of this past week, we will be discussing all of the British soaps as well. So give us a listen. Anything else?
I think that's it.
No.
All right. Well, then I will talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.